Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Jessica Treadway's new novel, Lacey Eye, is about a family torn apart by an act of terrible violence, a thriller which questions how well a mother really knows her child and what a young woman might do in the name of seeking love and acceptance. Treadway is a writing professor at Emerson College and is the author of the story collections Please Come Back to Me and Absent Without Leave and other stories, as well as the novel And Give You Peace. She will be talking about and signing her book Lacey Eye tonight at the Bookhouse in Stuyvesant Plaza at 7 o'clock. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Jessica Treadway back to the Roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
Now, we will address the obvious that you are on book tour. So, of course, when you've been on book tour for a long time, you're going to get laryngitis.
Well, I'm sorry about that. I'm glad to say this is the first time I've actually been able to do a little bit of traveling for the book. And I was very excited about it until I did go out to California and then come back with this voice. So I was hoping we could maybe agree that you asked me to sound as much like Lauren Bacall as I could. Maybe we could start there.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
But we'll get you, we'll talk to you about the book, we'll ask you questions, and then we'll send you back to drink a lot of tea, and you'll be ready for tonight's event.
And
all will be good. So let us talk about how this novel came about. It's a terrific read. It's
a
suspenseful, terrific, interesting read. And I'm curious as to, especially, and we'll talk a little bit about this transition from stories to novels, but what brought you to this path and said, I want to tell this particular story?
I made up the story based on the crime that a lot of people in the area have followed for years, I think, the Christopher Porco case. I was fascinated by the detail and the idea of a character, in my case, because I did, when I invented her, a character who was faced with the competing beliefs that her child might do one thing and or might do another thing that was more horrendous than she could imagine. I usually know that I have a story if I can't imagine my way into a person or a character. A lot of times, you know, I watch things on the news or I hear about things just from friends or I observe things. And sometimes I think, oh, I understand why that person did that or that. But when I realized that I could not imagine what it would feel like to have to manage those competing beliefs, then I knew I had a story.
When it comes to that competition, those competing beliefs, it is what I guess what we expect, what we want, what we hope, and then what the reality is. And sometimes just being unable to accept that reality.
I think it's funny. I think there's a spectrum. There's the term willful blindness that is a legal term that has to do with hiding knowledge about something you may be doing that's criminal from other people. I think I used to, before I understood that, that's where it came from, believe that it had to do with hiding things from yourself, which I think this is. In the case of my book, I think it's more the fact that the narrator, Hannah, might know something on some level, but is trying desperately not to know it. So those are the things that are competing with her. She's throwing up all the flack she can against all the evidence she has that things are not the way she wants them to be.
In the Christopher Porco case, Christopher's mother comes out initially and seems to implicate her son and says, well, this is what happens. But then, during the trial, comes out in staunch support of his innocence. And I think, like you, living through it and living in this region and watching that story unfold, it's hard not to feel for this woman who is so incredibly beaten and scarred, and physically scarred, by this attack, to stand up and say, my son wouldn't do this. So when it comes to the attack in the book on Hannah and Joe, what part of that did you really want to explore?
Well, I appreciate what you said about feeling for the victim in the actual crime, because I may have used the word fascinated before when I talked about my interest in the case. And by that, I did mean more than just kind of an intellectual curiosity. I think my fascination also had to do, especially as a writer, with both sympathy and empathy, you know, trying to understand what it would be like, not only trying to understand what it would be like, but also feeling deeply for the people involved. And I do think it was that exact detail that you mentioned, the first implicating her son as the attacker, and then afterwards saying, well, no, he could not have done that. And by the way, I absolutely believe that it's probably the case that she doesn't have a memory of that night. You know, I never thought in my reading about the case, reading the news coverage, thought that it was a question of lying. I can just imagine coming to, not having a memory, and saying, well, that's not the way it could have happened, regardless of what I may have indicated. But that was an intriguing part to me, and that was part of what I did use in the book.
And you wanted to explore the mother-daughter relationship.
I did. It was I think it's quite different, except for I did use some of the forensic details. And the reason that was the case was that it was important to me that the case against the convicted murderer in my book also be circumstantial, because I think it's far easier for someone to, you know, believe that something isn't the case if the evidence is circumstantial and not irrefutable and physical. And I was far less interested in writing about a grown child of the parent victims in my book being, for lack of a better word, sociopathic, him or herself. I think, as I understand sociopaths in the way they're classically defined, there's not a conscience at play. And I'm really interested more in the conflicts that emerge from a conscience. So I thought it would be more interesting to have a grown child, in this case a daughter, be vulnerable to the sway of a sociopath, in this case her boyfriend. So I do think that the plot is quite different, in that that dynamic is just different from the parent-child.
What kind of challenge is it in the storytelling of having a character, of telling the story through the eyes of a character who's ultimately fooling themselves on some level?
That was actually one of the two hardest things in the book, the second being getting the dynamic of all four family members correct. But it was very difficult to write from the first person narrative of someone who was, as you say, not seeing things that the reader herself or himself was seeing. So when I started the book, I actually tried to make it, because there are so many flashbacks, necessarily so, going back to earlier in the family's life, I started the book trying to make the present be in the present tense and all the flashbacks be in the past. That didn't work, except as an artifice that I couldn't quite justify. So I needed to make it a retrospective, and anyone who reads the book will see that ultimately, it is a retrospective. Hannah is looking back. And yet, even at the times when she is presenting in the past tense those things that happened, she is remembering her own inability to see the truth.
That idea of willful blindness that you mentioned a moment ago, did that keep coming back to you throughout the, was that the mantra of the, of the novel writing, if you will, of that idea?
I think once I realized that the book was about a character who was trying to make things prettier than they actually were, which is where the concept of Lacey Eye comes from, then I understood that all along Hannah was going to, at every turn I was going to have to examine what was it that Hannah was allowing in at any given time based on what was happening around her.
You just touched on this. Where did Lacey Eye come from?
The title?
Yeah. Because
it actually was I think of it as a happy accident. Some people really hate the title. And in fact, my editor was not all that excited about the title, and then she warmed to it. I think maybe people think that because it doesn't mean anything, the concept of a Lacey Eye might be revolting somehow. But the way it happened is that the daughter in the book, Dawn, does have a lazy eye, amblyopia, as a condition throughout her childhood. It does get corrected by surgery. later on when she's a teenager. So the phrase lazy eye was, I was typing throughout the book as I was writing, and I typed Lacey Eye one day. And throughout the process of all this, I'd had quite a few working titles, none of which actually worked. So I knew I was searching for a title, but I typed Lacey Eye, and then I went up to correct it, and I pulled my hands back. You know, it was one of those moments when I knew for myself that there was something there, but I didn't quite know what it was yet. And then I thought, no, that's it. It's not just the title, but it's the concept. It is the concept of changing something. It's a very small amount of psychic work to change one letter from lazy to lacy, and yet it is also a huge amount of psychic work to acknowledge on some level that you just cannot bear, you know, for the truth to be the truth, and so you will go in a different direction. So that's why, to me, I found that a very serendipitous moment.
And the idea of, when I read the title initially, of that idea of looking at something with perhaps lace, which has holes in it, which allows you to see through but not to see clearly, and perhaps in a way different than what is really there.
Oh, I love your interpretation of it. That's great. I'm going to say that I intended that all along.
Because I thought it was quite, because when I read the term lazy eye in the novel, I thought, oh, well, I wonder if that was ever under consideration.
Lazy eye?
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I mean, there were just these... I barely remember the working titles, but there were just no good ones for some reason.
Yeah.
And as I say, some people still don't like it, and that's, you know, I guess that's the case with, you know, a lot of books.
Yeah,
nobody's ever going to like
get over
everything.
It.
and I think it's just what the book should be about, so thank you.
In writing a book like this, especially when it's based on a case that is still reverberating throughout this community, do you come to any, or do you even expect to come to any resolution?
I guess it would depend on what you mean by resolution. I do think that Hannah comes to a resolution, which is a kind of, I think in the end she does accept where she is in her life, based on the choices she's had to make after what happens, and where she ends up. She does in the book have another daughter, and one of the things that she has to struggle with along the way is... Yeah, again, those competing values. One of the values is the other daughter who believes that her sister is guilty. So Hannah risks losing that daughter. So I think she does make a decision, which was important to me. It was important to me that the book was about her journey. I didn't actually start out to write a thriller at all. I meant it always to be her psychic journey and coming to see her own collusion, her own cooperation in, you know, her deficits and what she did see. So I do think that she comes to some resolution at the end. I hope so, anyway.
Well, the novel is very much a thriller, and and while we've been talking about a lot of heavy stuff, very, very fun to read.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The book is Lacey Eye. It is published by Grand Central. Jessica Treadway will be at the Bookhouse at Stuyvesant Plaza tonight at 7 o'clock for a reading and a signing of the book. You can find out more information by going to their website, BHNY.com. Again, the title of the new novel, Lacey Eye, by Jessica Treadway, published by Grand Central. So now lots of tea, vocal rest, and you'll be ready for tonight.
Thanks very much, Joe. I appreciate it.
Jessica Treadway, thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.